I had used the two blood points in her throat. When I first placed my hands, she had known what I was doing. Her blind and bloody gaze had met mine, and for a moment I read relief and permission on her face, but then, as I applied the pressure, she had reflexively reached up to seize my wrists. She had struggled, fighting for a few mere moments of more pain-riddled life. She was too weakened to put up much of a fight. She managed to scratch me a bit. It had been a long, long time since I had killed anyone. I'd never anticipated killing with arousal as some assassins do. I'd never made it my joy in life, my fulfillment, or even my cherished goal. I'd accepted it as my task in life when I was very young, and I'd done it efficiently and coldly, and tried not to think too much about it. That night, even with the messenger's initial permission, even with the knowledge that I was saving her from a lingering and painful death, was probably my worst experience as an assassin. And here I was making my small daughter a party to it, and binding her to silence. Had I sought righteously to keep Chade and Ketrickon from dragging her into being a Farseer with all the attendant history? They certainly would not have exposed her to anything like this. I had been so proud of how long it had been since I'd killed anyone. Oh, good work, Fitz. Don't let them put the burdens of being a Farseer on those thin shoulders. Make her an assassin's apprentice instead. On an estate like Withywood's, there is always somewhere a pile of brush and branches waiting to be burned. All end up heaped somewhere out of the way. Ours was at the far side of the lambing pens in a pasture. I carried the bundled messenger and led the way through the tall snowy grass in the winter night. B walked silently behind me. It was an unpleasant walk in the dark and wet. She followed me in the trail I broke. We came to a snowy-edged mound of brambly and twiggy branches, thorn bushes cut and thrown here, and fallen branches from the trees bordering the pasture that were too skinny to be worth cutting into firewood. It was an ample pile for my task. There I set down my load, and the bundled body tipped unevenly onto the pile. I pulled the branches over her and made the pile more compact. B watched. I thought perhaps I should send her back, tell her to go to my room and sleep. I knew she wouldn't, and suspected that actually witnessing what I had to do would be less horrific than imagining it. Together we went to fetch oil and coals. She watched me fling the oil over the branches and pour it generously over the wrapped body. Then we set it alight. The evergreen branches and brambles were resinous. They caught fire quickly, and their flames dried the thicker branches. I feared they would consume themselves before the body was gone, but the oily featherbed caught and burned well with a harsh stink. I brought more branches to throw on our bone fire, and Bee helped. She was always a pale little creature, and the chill black night chalked her, and the red firelight dancing on her face and the shock of hair made her some strange little death sprite from an old tale. The pyre burned well, the flames reaching up higher than my head. Their light pushed the night back. Soon my face was uncomfortably warm and my back still cold. I braced myself against the heat to push the ends of the branches in to add more to the conflagration. The fire spoke, crackling and hissing when I threw on a frost-laden branch. The flames ate our secret. B stood next to me, but not touching me, and we watched the messenger burn. It takes a long time to burn a body. Most of it we spent in silence. B had little to say other than,
"What shall we tell the others?"
I sorted my thoughts. "To Shan, we say nothing of this. She believes the girl left. We let Riddle believe the same. To the housekeeping staff, I will say that you complained of itchy bites, and I found vermin in your bed when I was putting you in it and decided to burn it immediately." I gave a small sigh and admitted, "It won't be fair to them. I must pretend to be very upset with them. I will demand that every bit of your clothing be washed fresh and new bedding brought for you." She gave a single nod. She turned her eyes back to the fire. I gathered another armful of branches and threw them onto the blaze. The half-burned limbs gave way under this fresh weight, crumpling down on the embered remains. The feather bed whispered away his downy ash. Were those blackened bones or blackened branches? Even I could not tell. The faint smell of roasting meat sickened me.
You are very good at this. You have thought of everything.
Not a compliment I wanted to receive from my little daughter. I used to have to do special work. For the king, I learned to think of many things at once.
And to lie very well, and not let people see what you were thinking.
That too. I'm not proud of it, Bee. But the secret that you heard tonight is not mine. It belongs to my very old friend. You heard what the messenger said. He has a son, and that son is in danger. Could she hear in my voice how peculiar I thought this news? The fool had a son. I had never been absolutely certain of his masculinity, but if a child had been born, it must have come from a woman's womb. That meant that somewhere that son had a mother. A woman who presumably the fool had loved. I thought that I had known him better than any other person ever had, and yet this was something I never would have suspected.